The second element of Irenaeus' strategy was to oppose this wide variety of myths that were developed by the Gnostics with what was called a rule of faith, a set of propositions which functioned to guide the reading of Scripture. This is what later became the creed, that is, the profession of faith, which states what how Christians see reality. So that even the most adventuresome theologian in the Orthodox party, Origen of Alexandria in the late second and early third century, began his adventure in speculative theology by recounting those teachings that he shared in common with all other Christians before entering into his systematic theology. Thirdly, and very significantly, Irenaeus proposed the apostolic succession as opposed to the secret teachers, so that we have now a canon rather than expanded writings, we have a rule of faith rather than myths, and we have a tradition of teachers. Now, Irenaeus demonstrated this apostolic succession by tracing the bishops of Rome back from his own time to Saint Peter. And in so doing, he shows us the importance of the Roman Church already in the late second century. It was regarded by Irenaeus as others as the most important of the churches. Now, Irenaeus' strategy of self-definition that he used in the battle with Gnosticism became standard for later internal conflicts within Christianity. Whenever there would be a crisis within Christianity, bishops, the apostolic succession, these public institutional figures, would gather in council, read the scriptures, the canon of scriptures, and on that basis, elaborate the creed, elaborate the rule of faith. And this is the way that Christians responded to subsequent crises. So at the beginning of the third century, Christianity was internally prepared for its long period of political and cultural influence that began with Constantine in 313 CE, the year when Constantine issued the Edict of Milan, which changed Christianity from being a persecuted minority to being the official religion of the Roman Empire. This process of self-definition was not simply conceptual. The church that emerged out of the debate with Gnosticism was embodied. Christianity really values the body. Christianity notoriously has had problems with sex and in what to do with sexuality. But it has also always affirmed the importance of marriage and the importance of having children. And at that level, at least, it countered the view of Gnosticism, which thought of sexuality as collaboration and evil and having children as the perpetuation of evil materiality. So Christianity has remained embodied. It has remained public. It includes potentially all people, not just the smart, not just the elite. Hoi polloi belong to the Christian movement. It is institutional in character. That is, it has visible leaders rather than secret and charismatic gurus. And these official leaders may not be terribly bright themselves, but nevertheless, they are networked with each other in a form of organization. Finally, Christianity is ritual in character. Because bodies matter, the way bodies perform certain kinds of actions together is important. Space and time matter because bodies matter. This communion among Orthodox bishops, finally, made them the visible leaders within the empire in this community. So that when Constantine makes Christianity the official religion of the empire, it is these Orthodox leaders, not the secret teachers, who are going to be an important body of people to interact with. And we find then, in subsequent centuries, the fact that Orthodox Christianity tends to be imperial Christianity, and that heterodox forms of Christianity tend to flourish outside the boundaries of the Roman Empire, in East Syria, in Egypt, and in North Africa. At the end of the second century, Christianity is internally prepared to take on the burden of being the imperial religion.